All right. We are back. All right. And it is time for questions. And so where shall we begin, Daniel?
Okay, so for you that are streaming, you can add the questions into the chat room. Meanwhile, we have somebody in the live audience, and they will ask questions.
Good afternoon, Alexis. It's wonderful to be here and hear you again. Thank you so much. I think that certainly a question that I have almost every day with regard to the kind of fragmentation that you're talking about is the fragmentation that we see reflected in the world around us, and especially in our country right now. And what everybody, that word divisiveness that I've never heard used so often as it is now. And all the disparate parts of ourselves and the ugliest possible parts of ourselves that seem to be reflected back at us ever more intensely, even though, of course, they're wonderful. As always there are beautiful, illuminated, wonderful things happening among all the people in this time of awakening, I guess. But my struggle is to reconcile and move forward and try to understand and try to forgive, try to find within myself the ability to forgive all of this dissonance and meanness. And I'm wondering if you can give us some help here.
Okay. Well, definitely that's part of the journey. As you become whole yourself and as you become a radiant transmitter rather than just a receiver into the world, as you transmit energies into the world, transmit your harmony, transmit your vision, transmit your imagination of the future, transmit your goal of your spiritual path, that goal of oneness and what that means to you, to the world will change. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to actually affect the various individuals. You know, it's not going to make a guy who's about to beat his wife or child to death stop and go, oh, what is that? Oh, I guess I can't do it. It's not going to do that kind of intervention. It's not going to appear at first to have any bearing whatsoever on what's going on. All the negativity, all the divisiveness, all the pain and all the suffering, initially it may not make a difference or appear to, okay? The point we're making is that between your intention and the result manifesting in the world, there is a time lag. In this time lag is the time when all the energies and the pieces can line up to what you choose, to what you're envisioning, to what you're imagining. And you will see how this works when we do the meditation process, because that's where you actually own this world as yours. Rather than being at the effect of the world, you now become the giver of the luminous vision to the world. And if you'll notice already, to the extent that you have done that, you're already noticing that there are more and more people who are stepping up to be light bringers than before. More people are waking up. More people are standing up for themselves and for others. There is a beautiful rise of positive force that is happening. It's happening at the same time that the bullies and the negatives and the fighters and those who are hurting others is continuing apace. Doesn't look like there's any any lack of that. But the positive vision is going to plant seeds, and people around the world are going to respond to that. These people are in your created reality, just like the obnoxious people that are creating the divisiveness. These people are creating harmony. These people are creating community. They're creating belonging. They are creating inclusiveness. They're creating acceptance. They're creating healing. And it's more than ever. But sometimes, and this is a mythology that humans seem to have and can't seem to shake, is that you've got to collapse down into the pit of darkness before you can turn around and come back up. It's like you. Well, you can see a problem coming. You can see a problem arising. Why can't you just, get it and turn it around there? You could, but your mythology, your cultural training, your cultural mythology is that, no, you're going to wait until it gets really bad. And then you'll do something about it. If you notice, that's the MO of most people. That they're, if it's like a little nagging, okay, all right, never mind, I can ignore that. But it has to be kind of like a, like a hammer on the head for a person to be able to say, okay, all right, I'll address it, I'll look at that, I'll change something. So this is just part of the mythology that human beings live by. Now, that could very well change in the future, but that also depends upon your vision. What is your vision of how people are going to heal and change and grow in the future? So your job then is to imagine that. And your job is to say, okay, how am I going to grow in the future? How would I take all these experiences and grow more by them? How can that make me more luminous rather than feeling stressed? That's your opportunity. You see what we're saying?
I do, yes. May I follow up with that? Something, kind of a picture, flashed for me while you were speaking a few minutes ago, talking about all those disparate particles within that bubble. And what came to me personally was an interesting juxtaposition of past and present, or maybe an overarching vision of the eternal now, where those disparate parts of us that have led us to where we are now, all of our past lifetimes, our past karmic decisions and experiences, which have not necessarily been forgiven and integrated, are reflected in the dissonance now. So that, in other words, the past that is unresolved is interacting right now with the lack of resolution and harmony in the present. And it's all sort of happening. Past and present then are happening in the now.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if this is a moment that has come to us to out of this meld to create. Well, I'm sure either we can create an amazing future, or I suppose we could also sink. So
yeah, it's your choice right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
and it's your choice every moment.
Mm-hmm. Explain. Can you explain a little more about how we got here, from the perspective of how to work through this, especially somehow the theme of forgiveness seems to be extremely important to me in all of this.
Yes. Okay. Well, we didn't go into past lifetimes only because past lifetimes do not compel or impel. Okay, past lifetimes are amplification influences into this life. And you can generally address any issue in this life through working only in this life. You can do that. the advantage of knowing past lifetimes, which are not all of them are actually physically real lifetimes, etc. They are bubbles of imagination. Sometimes they are archetypal energies that you can perceive in a scenario that is as real as a lifetime, as real as what you experience now. But those experiences have not made you what you are now. Just as experiences of your pieces and all the younger selves and all their experiences don't make what you are now. What you are now is made by your belief of where you're going. Where you are now is created by the belief systems that you have adopted and the assumptions that you've made and the responses and reactions that you make to your life with that belief, because of those beliefs, that set up a track of probability to the future. Now, if you were to dream and imagine the future in exquisite and beautiful detail, the future that you wish, the future, that detail of the future being the identity of you, the non-negative ego identity, the truer, more spiritual, more essential, harmonious identity of you, you the master of your pieces and the integrated wholeness, in other words, the synergy of your pieces. When your pieces work together in harmony rather than in conflict with each other, then they create a synergy. And the synergy is greater than the sum of the parts. That's the definition of a synergy. When you are working as a synergistic person and you create a future, then all your parts working in harmony together with you, who you are now, will own that particular blend of choices, the particular beliefs, and that orientation, and they will be in those choices to those orientations, therefore, all the time, and you will find that you will move to that future. But you see, the future is what creates the present. If we say the past creates the present, then essentially what we're going to be doing is we're looking to the past to see our future then. We don't may not think it that way, but that's what it happens de facto. And if you look at the past to create your future, then that just means that you're just projecting the past onto the future. You don't want that. You want a future that is grander and more beautiful, and that you are happier, more fulfilled, more whole, more complete, more one than in the present. Okay, so what you do, and we did this in our previous seminar, which has not yet been released, but it will be. But we in our previous seminar we took the template of the future and had everyone work with their future to get themselves on that track. Right? So we're going to be doing that in this meditation as well. Okay, now we're not to discount that or diminish any of the past lifetimes or of the past. They're important because they have messages. They have things that you want to learn. They have things that you want to know about. They tell you something about yourself, and you want to take that in and own that information about yourself. But once you have that information about yourself, then what do you want your self pattern to be in the future? You don't want to go and repeat your past lifetimes. You want to create new experiences. So then it can be a very great opportunity for awareness. And we do recommend that especially people work with healing and loving on a more continuous basis, perhaps with their inner child and inner adolescent and young adult, to mention a few, to kind of tweak it and tune up the frequency. Now, just to let you know, though, your past lives don't have to change. Your child doesn't have to change. Your adolescent doesn't have to change. You're the one who's making the change. So you, what you do is you work with the past. You're working with the ownership and learning and experiencing and getting the harmony there and getting the clearing and the harmony there. And once you get that, then you are the one who will take all of these energies, now no longer negative or limiting, but energies that are vibrating with possibility and ready to go. And you're the one who's going to take them to the future. You see what we're saying?
I think I do, but I need a little bit of clarification here because...
I have other questions too.
Yeah, we do need to go to other questions, but
can I just clarify this one thing she just said?
Very quickly, yes.
That the relevance of working with past lives is because if you can observe them, by observing them, you can change the effect, which it can resolve in the present and give you an opportunity to choose differently so that you create a different future.
Well, you see, what you're doing here is that you're kind of automatically assuming that if you're changing in the present, you're changing your future, and that's not necessarily the case. You may make your present better, but in order to change in the future, you've got to consciously participate in this and consciously move that.
Right.
Okay, so you can make yourself feel better and get yourself into a place to where you can make better choices for the future, but it doesn't come automatically. It's like the whole idea, if I resolve all the obstacles, get rid of all my problems and obstacles, my life's going to be grand, my future's going to be great. No.
Right.
Okay, so just keep that in mind. All right, let's go to the next question then.
Okay, so we have two questions that are pretty similar in content, and so I'm going to ask them together.
All right.
The first one is, I have hay fever. I think the hay fever is a reflection of me feeling attacked and unsafe in the world. Mm-hmm. I've been changing my beliefs to feel supported and loved in the world, but I haven't been able to heal the physical hay fever. So any advice on that?
Okay.
And so the other one is, Galexis, can we undo rapidly the bone deterioration and joint pain caused by, I'm assuming, decades of ignoring certain fragments?
Okay. Yes, they are similar. But we're going to start with the hay fever one as far as a focus first. Hay fever is an allergy. An allergy is a reaction of anger and resistance to a particular substance. In fact, there are several pieces within you that are allergic to each other. And it's like one child self part may be allergic to another child self part, or a relationship that you had, you may... The self that you have, who had that relationship and that relationship, they may be allergic to each other. There's just, it's like we knew a woman who, and any time she talked with her about her father, it was such an emotional issue she had with him, she would lose her voice. She'd literally go hoarse. So this is an allergic effect to something, and it's based on an anger, resistance, a loss of power to said thing, whatever it is. Now, in the sense of hay fever, it is pollen. Pollen is a protein that has to do with its plant sex. Okay, there is a sense of propagation, a sense of expansion, a sense and this is dominating a person for them to have hay fever. It feels like an attack. It feels like an attack, and the person is resisting. Okay, one of the things you can do with that is that you can go to nature, because it's the pollen to various flowers. And you can go to the flowers, maybe even the flowers that you're most allergic to, or the most that the hay fever triggers all this histamine response in your body. And you may go to these flowers, and you may love these flowers, forgive these flowers, and say, you and I are going to be good friends, and we're going to love each other, we're going to work with each other, and we're going to I'm going to live in nature in harmony. I'm going to live amongst the flowers in harmony. I'm going to live in a joyous connection with the sexuality of plants and with human sexuality and with the propagations and abundances of possibilities. And I'm going to feel at home and safe in there. So even if you've processed any kind of resistance or any association, because sometimes hay fever can come by association when you're going through a very difficult time in your life and you smell a lily and all of a sudden you get allergic to a smell or to a flower or something like that, and you begin to be a victim. But once you totally give up victim consciousness in every way, no, even if you continue to have hay fever symptoms, even if you continue and in the second question to have pain, joint pain, and feeling like bone loss and feeling frailer and frailer, even if you're feeling that, you cannot allow yourself to be in victim consciousness at all. Recognize this is all being created in one way or another for you to take action. And sometimes the action is to stop being a victim. Stop allowing the world to mess you up. Now, it's easier said, of course, than done. But the journey out of victim consciousness into empowered consciousness has to be you deliberately creating a love relationship between you and the allergen, or you and the difficult circumstances, and in the situation with bones and joints and so forth. It could be a program of aging. It could be a collective program of aging. And you want to get really feel that you are at peace with aging and that you don't feel that you have to hold everything together, because bones are about knitting things together. You don't have to hold everything together. And then the joint pain is the inflammation. There's anger in inflammation. So anyone who has inflammation, and inflammation is one of the most common things we see with powerless anger, inflammation in various joints is to inhibit the movement of said joints, to create pain when you want to move forward, to create pain when you want to express yourself. And so that's also a kind of a victim consciousness, like you're being punished somehow. And by whom? Who could be punishing you? We would say that in both cases, the hay fever and also the joints, that these are programs in the collective, into the consensus. Because, you know, every spring, the weather girl always says cheerily, "Ah, it's hay fever season," you know, and sometimes there's even maps with hay fever indexes, right? And so you begin to think, well, I belong, you know, I've hay fever, I belong, and people who have joint pain bone loss, well, you know, I'm an older person. Oh my gosh, I belong. I belong to this group. I belong to this identity. I have hesitation. I don't feel that I'm allowed to move forward in my life, because if I moved forward, that somehow or another I would do it wrong, or I would be a bad person, or if I really listened to myself, then there would be a problem. There would be something, some slap back, some payment. I would have to pay a big price. And so in the case of joints and bones, we'd say, let go of all your burdens. And you have to do this very deliberately every day. Just let go of the burdens and stop trying to pull everything together. Let it just, okay, there may be family members trying to get everybody together. Come on, sit down at the table. Come on, let's get together. Oh, let's get organized. Let's It could be any kind of gathering energy. Just kind of for a while, let it go and gather your pieces, your inner pieces together first. Okay, and for hay fever, for both of you, take your power back. Then you can start dreaming a new dream. Now, in the meditation, you're going to find your a way to do that. And we also do recommend that in the that you do the meditation more than once if you can. All right. So, thank you.
And how about undoing the damage?
Okay, undoing the damage of the joints and the bones?
Yeah.
Well, first you need to get rid of the emotional program. It's in a program of that you have to carry burdens, that you are getting older and this is the cost you have to pay. You have to bust the programs. Now, it's not in our scope to give all the details on how to do that. In fact, that would be a very good seminar for the future for one of these seminars. So we might do that. But we would also recommend that if you want to do some deeper work on anything, then get with your really, really good energy healer, coach kind of person. You know, now Daniel does this kind of thing. You can take apart the pieces, and then you can heal all of them. And then, of course, in any particular issue you have, there's going to be pieces, and you can take apart the pieces, heal them, put them back together in harmony, and then you can start rebuilding. But right now you can't rebuild because can't recover and rebuild because the stress is still there, and that needs to be released first.
Okay, so here's another question. This person has two issues. One is very poor digestion. The other one is that since he went on his spiritual path, his external life has become gradually dull. And additionally, he says here, he's a young man, 23, and he no longer finds interest in the old social groups that he was part of, and he feels very isolated.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a transition. Mm-hmm. When you get onto the spiritual path, you have to be careful and not bring your ego along. Okay? So what he's experiencing is that what he used to organize his identity, i.e. the ego comparison with others, the ego being this is my facade, this is who I've got to be, and I've got to present this way, and I've got to be the spiritual person, this is the way it's got to be. This ego organizational factor needs to go, because what's happening is that, and this is everybody has to go through this, ego is probably at its peak in the 20s, and its peak at 23. It's like this is, because at 23, it's like you generally think about it, those of you who are older than 23, you thought you knew everything at 23. You really did. You thought, I have a handle on this world, but why isn't it working right for me? You know, everybody has to go through that. So don't take this personally, dear one. But the important thing is to recognize that the self that you are has got to be more whole. It's got to be more complete so that you can listen and you can hear the stories of others, that you can hear your own stories, that you can own who you are more. And when you do that, you find that, yeah, you know, you're not as interested in the groups, perhaps, that you used to belong to because your identity no longer is there. But you've got to have some human contact. You can't just kind of sit around and twiddle your thumbs and wait for a spiritual community to find you. So what we would recommend is that you find groups that are interested in spiritual-oriented things, but not necessarily have a guru that you have to have obeisance to. Study with a group that studies theosophy, for example. Those are obviously wonderful, wonderful groups. You get to think a lot about basic metaphysical concepts, and you get to meet with really beautiful people. So just find basic philosophies and concepts and so on and enjoy that. And maybe if you have a Toastmasters group, join a Toastmasters group. Even though it's not a spiritual group, it's fun learning how to express yourself well. And it's fun supporting people and expressing who they are. So it's quite a fun thing, and you can start realizing how important it is to connect with people, how important to connect with people on all levels. They don't have to be at your level. They don't have to be at the level above you. But all of that is your ego trying to be spiritual and trying to say, well, you've got to be like this and people have got to be like this, or otherwise you're not going to spend any time with them. You're not going to be interested in them because they're not as conscious as you are. They're not as evolved as you. Beware. Do not let yourself go there. It's very tempting because you do think you know everything at 23. And it's only later on that you discover how, oh my gosh, how much I do not know. But to get some humility here, to allow your ego to function correctly for you, not in the negative form, but in the positive form, the positive ego will bring to you harmonious and interesting people, but you have to know how to ask, and you have to make sure that your negative ego is not in charge of anything. So do not compare yourself to anybody. Try not to judge anybody. Try not to see levels and hierarchies in your culture based on consciousness, awareness, or how good they are and all that. Just kind of start dismantling the whole ego construct and start looking at, we are all divine sparks of consciousness. And so everybody, even if they have no clue who they are divine spark of consciousness like I am. Wow, look at the light. Look that God is everywhere. And if you go in that direction, you will be so rewarded. Your life will definitely not be boring. Your life will be filled with all sorts of interesting things, and you'll get to meet all sorts of spiritual people who are, by the way, spiritual people tend to be pretty eccentric, okay? So don't judge eccentric people until you get to know them, and then if you don't want their company, that's a whole another thing. But a lot of eccentric people have a unique connection to the divine within them. Otherwise, they wouldn't be expressing something that would be at odds with the collective. So just look around you. Look at the spark of life. Learn how to have love and compassion for all beings. And then all of a sudden, more magic will happen. And when magic starts happening, you don't get into this dull, drab thing. That's the ego, by the way. The ego makes everything dull. It makes everything matter of fact. It has a set order. It's got to be this way. This is it, and so on. And all. It's either this or that, and I'm not going to go there. So they've got to be like me. They've got to whatever. The ego will generally sabotage you there. So if you want an exciting life, start looking for the spark and start looking for the magic. Okay. All right.
So the next one is, what is the best practice to stay in touch with my higher self?
All right, well, first of all, you just know that you have one, okay? And that your higher self is the synergy of all your lifetimes. Every one of your lifetimes, you're one of them, but every one of them comes together in synergy. At the time that at the end of all your lifetimes, you merge into this higher self. And the higher self is greater than the sum of the parts, because your higher self knows who you are. So to connect with your higher self, you may not have, you know, at the level that you are, you don't know much about the higher self. It's like bringing in God and sitting down and having coffee with God. You just, you know, you don't really know God that well, okay? You can make projections and assumptions, but the experience will elude you. So here's what we would suggest. Now, we did do a seminar years ago, a shorter seminar, and it was on connecting with your guides and your higher self and so on. And so what we would suggest is that you write in and ask, and the channel will look through all the the lists of the titles, because we did these like years ago, and there's meditation on there in connection with your higher self and your guides and whatnot. So that could be a good way to go. A second way is that if you are familiar at all with the Lazarus material, then you can purchase a Meeting Your Higher Self audio file that you can do there. But what most people tend to do is just use their imagination. That's 5D, okay, fifth dimension is your imagination. You're here in 3D. So anything you imagine is not going to be physical. It's going to be beyond the physical. 4D is time space, and there's kind of, and you know, time is the torus. The fourth dimension is the torus. It's a big donut. It has a hole in it. So when you imagine in fifth dimension, and you allow yourself to take a peek, it can drop through an image or an energy through fourth dimension into third dimension, and you can feel it. So you can actually feel the presence of your higher self if you imagine. Okay? Now, this takes a little bit of practice, but, for example, the channel every day imagines her higher self and has got to the place to where her higher self has become so real that she can receive love directly from the higher self, and she can feel love. And that's where you want to go. And you can imagine the higher self is going to be either gender and whatever clothes it's wearing. If you keep imagining it in form, and eventually your higher self will say, you know, they're really adamant about, you know, connecting with us. So let's give them a more accurate picture. So at first, your picture or your image or your imagination of your higher self could change quite a bit, but after a while, it'll become consistent. But it takes practice. But we're going to call in your higher self in meditation, and you just might feel something. Okay?
All right, so here is a question by an artist who's been a professional artist for 40-plus years and has tried a variety of different tools, mediums, and surfaces. None of these mediums seem to be connected, except that the individual, the artist, is the connection and the desire to create. So maybe this is an analogy.
Mm-hmm.
So the last part of the question, which is below the third line here, is how can I connect these diverse mediums into one creative process?
Okay. Why would you want to? It seems like each medium has its own message. Oh, who was that that said the medium is the message? That was back in the 80s, wasn't it? 70s. McLuhan. Marshall McLuhan. Yes, thank you. Yeah. Well, each medium will draw out of you a particular brand of creativity, a particular vision, a particular insight, a particular sparkle of creative imagination. Okay, each one. So we would recommend, in a sense, that you just go from one to the other and just don't feel that you have to focus on one medium. Just go and play like you have been, which is really great. But when you played before, you were looking for something that felt important. You were looking for something that was going to give you a sense of finality or authority, that this was it, that this is the way to go. And the thing is that when you're creative, you don't ever really get those, okay? Being creative means that you're opened up to the possibilities and potentials of the whole universe. So the medium, each medium, try this medium or that medium, find what message that medium has for you. What is that teaching you? Is it teaching you about light? Is it teaching you about color? Is it teaching you about how to mix your paints? Is it teaching you how to proceed with patience or how to move through it? Maybe it's a more dynamic movement. It's teaching you something just in the process of it. Now, if you want to take all of those pieces together and look at a whole, then the whole would be that you as an artist have many different aspects, many different pieces. And each medium is teaching you a piece. And so your identity as the artist is that you can imagine and dream in all these pieces, using these pieces. Now, the channel is a musician, and she used to play professionally, and she has a keyboard now, one of those synthesizers that has many different settings for different sounds and different orchestrations and whatnot. And she finds that if she does the piano setting, she plays one thing. If she does the string orchestra setting, she plays something else. If she does just the brass chorus setting, she plays something else. It's that same kind of thing. It lends itself to a particular expressional form. And the more forms that you use, the more whole and more full can your creativity be, and what ideas and imagination it sparks. Now, we know that there's a whole bunch of artists who over the years have been well known to focus in one medium and stick with that one medium. But if you notice that someone like Picasso, yes, he painted. He was a painter, essentially. Yeah, he did a little sculpture, he did other stuff, but he was essentially a painter. But look, he went through periods where they were radically different looking from the previous one, using different color combinations. That was his way of dealing with the different pieces. You've got different media, that's different pieces, okay? So it creates a wholeness of you as the identity of the creative person. So celebrate that. If you're looking to find what is my niche, where I'm going to make money, and I'm going to make money as an artist, I need a niche. I need to be focused on something, or I need to use them all together in some unique way. We would say that that would be a way of limiting your creative potential. However, in some way or another, after you've gotten the message from all your different medium, maybe you might want to put together some kind of mural or some kind of piece that reflects the world, and you'll find that different medium will reflect different aspects of the world. Maybe you'll do something like that. And so instead of going through different phases, which takes longer time, maybe you'll find that it is something that you can blend together in a unique way to you. But it depends on you first, owning the expansive range of yourself as an artist. Thank you.
Okay, so here is a question about what's the best way to deal with insomnia. She's 64 years old and has dealt with insomnia since childhood.
Mm.
She's tried many things and nothing seems to help.
Okay.
And that is the last question.
All right. Well, we see those several things. And that needs to be done. One thing that needs to be processed is that in childhood, there was something that was a fright, that was a danger, or a perceived danger. Maybe it really wasn't a danger, but it was perceived as threatening. Maybe threatening the love of the parent or something. But there seems to be some kind of threat or issue that came about. And what that did is that entrained the survival brain, that's the fight, flight, or freeze, HPA axis, sympathetic nervous system, is operative in the limbic brain, which is the more reptilian primitive brain. It's the survival brain. And the survival brain says, oh my gosh, it's not safe. It's not safe. It's not safe. I've got to be vigilant. I've got to be aware. I've got to be on top of everything so that I can protect and defend myself. Now, when you go to sleep, you're defenseless. You're unconscious. How can you protect and defend yourself? Okay. So one of the things we're seeing here is that the limbic brain said, you know, every time that you go to sleep, you're defenseless. And what if that threat should come and get you? It's like the boogeyman's going to come get you. You're going to be attacked. You're going to be, you know, it's going to be scary. You could be, you know, taken out of your body and thrown across the universe. You could be, killed. You could be, you know, whatever. It's just, it's the imagination of a child can be quite wild. However, what we're sensing here is this, is that when you get your limbic brain on, it's like you put the lever on. It gets stuck there. So one thing is that you're chronically feeling unsafe. Now, in the context of what we're talking about today, because we're, you know, a lot of these questions could really be better addressed in a private session with us or someone. Okay, but in the context of the wholeness and the oneness, there are parts that are threatening other parts. And to be really good to find who is the threat, what is the threat, so that you can, you know, put the breaker on this limbic brain and restore your parasympathetic nervous system. Okay? So there's that. And that would, and you need to have harmony within the whole. You as the current you may need to go back and in meditation, when you go to bed at night, go and hug that 5-year-old or 4-year-old or whoever it was where it really began. And just hug them and say, it's all safe. We're all safe now, and you can go to sleep. Now, it's one of the ways you can deal with a lot of your unfinished pieces, is that you can love it, hold it, nurture it. I love you. You're safe now. Okay, especially with that. The second issue is that there is an issue with your circadian rhythm, and therefore your the timing of day and night. Day is safer, of course, than night, but at the same time, there's a lot more stresses that you have to engage with and you have to be on top of and so on. So, but when you have sleepless issues or when you have sleep issues, you can have you can have difficulty going to sleep or staying asleep or whatever, and you can really screw up your circadian rhythm. So what you may want to also do in connection with this is to really practice a really good circadian rhythm. And in other words, it might be tempting to watch TV late at night or be on the computer late at night or something, or do things that are stimulating. Too late in the day, or it could be that you feel behind, you have to hurry up and do all this stuff because you finally got up at noon and you're trying to catch up with the day. Whatever those things are, circadian rhythm is very important because it enables you to have a balance between the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system. It's built into nature. And so try to get yourself into bed at a reasonable time. Get up at a reasonable time, and in the morning when you get up, relate to the sun. Get the light on you, and at night, tone down the lights or wear blue blocker glasses or whatever you need to do so that you can calm down and calm down and keep repeating to yourself that you're safe. You actually are safe. And eventually you'll find if you can heal the child of its lack of safety, this can help you. Now, these are pieces. You can go to seminar after seminar after seminar and can do piece after piece after piece. And we're not diminishing it at all by saying, you know, this is a piece, you know, and you've got all these pieces need to be done. But some pieces have stronger messages than others. And those may need private work, okay, or repetitive work doing the meditation over and over again, okay? So thank you for that question. And thank you all for your questions.